Hello and welcome to the UX Hustle podcast. Today I'm so excited because I get to talk with and introduce you to Tiffany Shaw. Tiffany is a certified user experience designer, UX writer, and object-oriented UX strategist. She's also a UX Portfolio Power Play grad, which makes me extra excited to have her. She recently landed her first content design role at Meta. Previously, she worked for 5 years as a product designer and technical writer for a startup in the automotive service space. Outside of work, she enjoys creating digital art, watching K-dramas, and lifting weights in her home gym. And today, Tiffany and I get to talk about how she pivoted her career, how she found her niche within UX, how she resisted her niche, and then ultimately landed a job in her niche, UX writing, all during a pandemic. So I'm excited for you to dive into this episode. This is great no matter where you're at in your UX career and, you know, really paints a picture of what it's like navigating your career and figuring out where you fit in this UX industry. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to the UX Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Worthington. The goal of UX Hustle is to help UX designers design the career they love, maximizing the benefit of this multifaceted industry and strong community. We talk about what's really going on in UX and what it's like working in it, and interview people that are actively navigating their careers and UX. We don't expect to have all the answers, but we do keep searching, keep listening, and learning. Because at the end of the day, you are the user of your career. All right. Well, welcome to the UX Hustle podcast, Tiffany. I'm so excited to have you.
Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. Of course. So, could you tell us a little bit about where you're at in your UX career right now?
Yeah, so right now I'm working as a senior content designer at Meta. It's my second month, so I'm very new.
That's awesome. And how are you feeling after being at Meta for 2 months?
It's a lot to take in. I'm still very much in the onboarding process, and it's been a lot to take in. But everyone's that I've met so far has been really nice and very open to new hires. So it's been great.
That's awesome. I feel like having a supportive team like that, especially when you're first starting out at a new company, is really important. And I've heard Meta's onboarding process is pretty robust. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. It's a long process. It definitely takes some more than a couple of months just to get acquainted with the space that you're working in.
Mm-hmm. And how has that process been?
It's been smooth. It's just talking to a lot of people, asking a lot of questions, and being curious.
Yeah. And so how did you get into UX to begin with? Like, let's go all the way back in your career. How did you get into UX?
So I actually didn't start in UX. I graduated from UC Davis in 2012 as a design major, specializing in visual communications. And then after taking on a couple of graphic design jobs, then I got really interested in UI design. So my thinking at the time was I wanted to be able to create the interfaces for mobile apps. But at that time, there weren't really any like UI specific course, especially like mobile design specific courses out there that were like online. So I ended up taking a UX design course. So I got certified as a UX designer through the UCSD, so the UC San Diego extension.
It sounds like you got into that from the UI side of wanting to really be able to apply your UI skills to applications.
Right. So after I got, in the middle of me getting certified in UX design, then I got reached out to by a startup company that was working in the automotive space. Because at that time, I was working for a printing company that printed the marketing materials for automotive dealerships. So I guess that piqued their interest, and they reached out to me asking me if I'd like to interview as a UX UI designer. And then when I got in, at the time they had two positions open. They had a like a graphic design, you know, like an entry level UI UX, and then a pure UI UX designer. And then they asked me, hey, so which position do you want? And I said, well, of course I want the UX UI design one. And then I ended up getting offered the graphic design position. But through that, I was able to, you know, get hands on with some of the projects and work with the senior UI UX designer and, you know, see how he's working on things. So that was my entry into UX design.
That's so interesting because you were doing print design.
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got into that space of being able, of having that opportunity, of having the access to UX people by going through and working in the same industry that you had been working in print design.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I feel like that's such a great way to do that, though, of showing your expertise in an industry or your understanding in an industry, and then being able to make that transition a little bit easier.
Yeah. And I feel also a lot of demand nowadays on UX designers to have some sort of design background. So if you have a strong visual design skills, that is definitely an asset that they like.
Yeah. I mean, especially with your degree in design, your hands-on experience in the visual side of things, I'm sure that's extremely helpful.
Yeah, it definitely did help when I was getting into designing user interfaces.
Yeah. So then what happened after you started at that company? You were having more access, working with other UX designers, the senior UX designers. What happened then?
So it was interesting because I got in, I was immediately put on graphic design work starting day one. And then my first UX project, UX UI project, was actually to create a document that described the different functionalities of an appointment scheduling system that the senior UX UI designer had created.
Ooh, interesting. How did that feel?
It was interesting because I didn't really know what I was doing at the time. I didn't even know that that was technical writing, but I think going through that process and then really taking apart like all the different elements on a user interface did help me get like a deeper level of understanding of the product and then how important it is to be consistent in the way that you design and also write your words.
Mm. Yeah, because actually documenting what the specifications were and also the functionality, is that right?
Right. So any kind of buttons on the screens, I would need to describe, you know, what are their default states or where exactly in the flow it's you would be using this button, and then what's going to happen after you click this button.
Wow. So like documentation of really the entire interface and what it actually meant, like how right. It would actually be used.
And then this document, it had a very broad audience. So it was something that the stakeholders would review before the project went to development. And then before the project started, then the developers, the front-end developers would need to read through this. And then if they have any questions, then that's taken back to design. So in a way, it helped us with iterations too.
Mm. And I'm sure with, because like, what's the typical time between handing off designs and the technical documents that you provided and it actually being built?
Usually, from my experience, the technical writing portion took about like half the time it took to design it. And then obviously I would need to get very involved during the process of designing it. So prior to later when I had more experience, then prior to when we started user interface designs, then I started creating requirements document and then use these documents to go and gather from key stakeholders what are the expectations of the projects and the goals and the different business values that we're trying to achieve.
Wow. So really talking with a lot of different stakeholders.
Yeah.
Wow. And so once you put together that document, like, what was the feedback that you got? What did you learn about your career? What did you decide to do next?
Well, those documents, I think they were helpful in that they became like a single source of truth. So it definitely helped with directing people in understanding the different projects. So the feedback on these documents were generally pretty positive because they knew that so much effort went into the design. So I think as a result, it definitely made design more like respectable and then maybe not exactly the single source of truth, but at least something that they can refer to and then state their position on it with, you know, data to back it up. And then how technical writing helped me out in my career is it made me a better designer for sure. Helped me pay more attention and be more mindful of the different words and the placements of different capabilities on the page. So it helped me make sure that I'm more mindful of how I'm designing. Also, I think it also helped me land a senior role because it shows that I have a deep level of understanding and I'm curious and I dig into every detail about the interfaces that I'm designing for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so at that company, did you continue to do more technical writing?
Yes. So during I think pretty much my entire duration that I was at the company, I was doing technical writing. But I think within like 2 years of me being in the company, then I ended up taking on the full end-to-end design work. So that was pretty tough at the time.
Yeah. Why is that? Why was it tough?
Well, at that time, I had a 6-month-old son. So, you know, like babies, they demand a lot of attention. And it was pretty unexpected when that happened because the senior UX UI designer that I worked closely with was let go without any notice. So, you know, unexpectedly, I just had to take on the full work of, you know, getting the requirements and then creating design mocks for them and then doing the technical writing. So it was a lot to take on. And then I had to do it for all the projects, you know, being a design team of one, it was pretty difficult.
I bet between managing the different priorities that were going on and the different projects, coming up with those requirements, kind of filling in that gap that happened suddenly, and getting up to speed on whatever other projects had been going on outside of the one that you were working on, and then being a mom.
Yeah, it was a lot to keep track of. And I remember being very tired, but I knew that so many people were relying on me. So I just did my best to push through and continue to deliver at like the highest level that I could.
Yeah. How did you balance it? What were some of the things that you did to try and balance?
For sure. What you mentioned before, prioritizing the work. So when I wasn't very clear about what was more important, I would reach out to the stakeholders, the product managers, and then my direct manager, just to make sure that I was in line with delivering what needed to be done first. And then I guess like from my family's perspective, I did get a lot of help with the caring for my baby and then housework, you know, meals. They were, you know, my family did their best to make sure that they were taking care of me. So that really helped.
That's awesome. I feel like those are the things that we forget about, like the housework, the having food, like the very basic human needs, and having someone that can take care of those things in a way so that you can just pull out a meal and eat it instead of, you know, planning your meal or planning grocery shopping and cooking and doing all of those things. When things are taken care of in that way, it gives us a lot more brain space to focus on the things that we need to show up for.
Right. I completely agree with that.
Yeah. And even just asking for help in those areas can be really hard.
Yeah, it's not good to bottle all your frustrations and, you know, your stress inside. It definitely helps to like have somebody who cares about you that you can talk to and explain how you're feeling and then are willing to help you make things better.
I love that. Because I think sometimes we get so caught up in the like, I need to prioritize everything. I need the checklists. I need the like the systems to make things easier and better. And we forget that sometimes we just need a human. We need a person that can help us, that can support us, that can be there for us, that we can lean on. And that can be so much more beneficial than a system sometimes.
Right.
So after you were working on everything from the end-to-end spectrum, were you continuing to do technical writing while doing the end-to-end design work?
Yes. So I also had to do the technical writing in addition to the end-to-end design work.
Oh my goodness. That sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, but I guess because I was, you know, in charge of the designs and the technical writing, so it actually helped me spend a little less time on designs because I knew that any errors that I made in the designs, you know, like small things like typing a word incorrectly or maybe not having the right amount of padding between a button and a paragraph of text, like those are things that, or actually even more importantly, like any workflows that I missed. So like default states on certain like selectors, those things can all get caught in the technical writing if I missed it during the requirements phase. And object-oriented UX definitely helped also make sure that my designs, like I accounted for a lot of different things in my designs before getting to the technical writing. So like the designing itself ended up taking a little less time. And then the technical writing portion actually was where I spent the majority of my efforts in.
That makes sense. Can you tell us a little more about object-oriented UX and how that impacted your career? And especially at this time in your career, it sounds like that helped a lot.
Yeah, so when I started taking on the end-to-end design work unexpectedly, like at that time, my baby was still very young and I was a little bit lost as I really worked on the screen designs. It was hard for me to know, you know, what is the best word to label a button, for example, or where should I position this button on the page? What color should it be? And I didn't have any data to back up why those things were like the best positioning for buttons, for example. So because like the company I worked at didn't do user testing. A lot of the feedback just came in through the stakeholders who worked directly with the clients. So that was like my, you know, source of data that I could speak to. But, you know, everyone has different opinions about where they think a button should be placed or like what it should be called. So and then I heard like as I was driving home one day from work, then I heard about Sophia on the User Defenders podcast. And then she explained that you have to look at the digital space from like the perspective as like when you are looking at a physical space. So like her example was like the coffee shop where you walk in and you can't tell the tables are tables or the chairs are chairs or people are people. So I thought that maybe this would help me, you know, decide the best way to do UI design. So I ended up enrolling in her first cohort and came out learning a lot.
That's awesome. And I was in that cohort too. And it sounds like, and I've definitely heard that example from Sophia a bunch of, then, you know, if you are able to decide that that is a chair, you can't tell if someone's sitting in it or not. If it's occupied, you don't know the status of the chair. And I can tell how that can translate into what you are working on with your technical writing with, you know, the default states of buttons and even at that like granular level, but even taking it a step further in that macro level that you're able to get with object-oriented UX. And so how did that program support you in your career?
Well, it worked as a tool for me to get more stakeholders involved in the design process, because used to be I would just get the requirements from them and then figure it, like digest what they said and then figure it out. But I managed to create an object map. And then at this time, it was like the height of COVID. So all the dealerships, the automotive dealerships, just shut down. And then we all transferred to working from home. So like, you know, hello, I have like four stakeholders just sitting around being bored and, you know, got nothing to do. So I ended up spending like 3 hours a week on them on a video call and then had them help me figure out the object map for our system.
Whoa! That's awesome. Like a way to take advantage of that like COVID time.
Yeah.
Of like seeing that opportunity of actually getting access to your stakeholders when it might have been really difficult to in the past.
Yeah, it was really great. And they seemed very engaged in the activity and it was very easy for them to follow and understand and helped us uncover a lot of like duplicate objects in the system. And then also it helped me get a deeper understanding of like our databases. So as a result, I was able to like speak a little more clearly about my concerns to like engineers that I was working with. So that definitely helped.
That's awesome. And that communication is so important too. And I think
that's something that I've noticed
with having an understanding of database architecture is so helpful in communicating with developers, because that's really where the constraints are. It's not so much the visual front end side that's limiting what we can do or the problems we can solve or how we can solve those problems. It's usually at the database level of like, yeah, we have it set up this way. Like we can't change it.
Yeah.
And so once you took the object-oriented UX course and started implementing that in your career, did you start changing the way that you were seeing how you wanted your career to move forward?
At that time, I think I was pretty set on wanting to continue pursuing a product design role. But most of my skills were in technical writing. So I had a little bit of like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, like an unsettling feeling where it's like what I wanted to do didn't match my superpowers or like my skill set. So that was a little bit difficult for me. And then I ended up feeling a little stuck and not being too clear about what I wanted to do in the future.
And so what did you do when you were in that place? Because I can feel that being uncomfortable and frustrating.
Yeah, so someone mentioned to me that maybe I should pursue a UX writing role, content strategist or UX writing role. So in the interest of learning more about it, I got certified as a UX writer through the UX Content Collective. And then that helped me to understand, like, as a UX writer, what you would be doing in your day-to-day role. So in case anyone doesn't know, like, a UX writer or, like, a content designer, content strategist, information architecture, they're kind of all the same thing in a way. And then they just design the words that go on the interface.
Yeah. And, like, looking at the structure of different things.
Right. So it's very strategic, for sure. But just dealing with words rather than like the placements of buttons, for example, or like how to make it visually appealing from like a aesthetic sense.
Mm-hmm. And that definitely aligns with, you had been going down this path of like technical writing, object-oriented UX, which is a lot of information architecture and strategy, then getting into content strategy and UX writing. Were you starting to see that pattern or not yet?
I think that it took me a while to see that pattern. And actually what helped me see that was taking your UX portfolio PowerPlay course. And then there was one exercise where, the first exercise where it was finding your niche and asked you questions like, what things do you enjoy doing? And then when do you feel like you're in your on moment when you're doing the thing that you enjoy? And what do you need to be in order to do the thing that you enjoy? And what I actually ended up writing was senior technical writer, because the thing I enjoyed doing was creating documents that help people. And then it just gave me satisfaction when people go through, you know, they just read through my documents and then look at the screen designs. And then they say, you know, I get it. I know what we're trying to achieve. And this was really helpful for me to understand. So I like having that kind of impact.
That's awesome. And, you know, with UX Portfolio Power Play, I love that exercise so much because it makes it so much easier to see the patterns in what we enjoy doing, because we're taking the time of looking at our actual experience. It's not like theoretical or like, what could you want to do? It's very grounded in what have you done? What did you enjoy doing?
Right.
And being able to see that pattern is huge. And that you wrote down senior technical writer makes me really happy. And like, what else? So that helped you realize it. And what did you decide to do with that information?
Well, the sad thing was, even though I identified that was the thing that was probably best for like, you know, my happiness and then the future and doing something that I enjoy, I ended up, you know, being like, no, like from day one, what I wanted to do was UI design. In order to be a UI designer, I got to be a product designer. So I ended up, when I was looking for another job, I kept applying for product design roles and I kept failing at them. And I didn't know why, because, you know, I felt like I went through the process of, you know, showing my work, explaining how I got the results of my design, and then the impact to the business. And it wasn't good enough, and I couldn't really figure out why.
Mm. And how did that feel?
It was very disencouraging. It made me feel like I wasn't good enough. And then it caused me to stop my job searching many times when I got rejected.
Mm. I can definitely understand that. Because it takes so much energy, too.
Right. Especially if you're
putting yourself
like,
out there.
Yeah, especially if you're juggling, you know, your family and then the demands of other people at work. It's very exhausting to reach out and have to apply for jobs.
Yeah. And it sounds like you had come to this realization that technical writing might be the right path and decided, no, like maybe that feels too right. But like, that's not what I want. I want this thing. And this is what was it about being a product designer that made you want to keep on that path?
If I'll be honest, a lot of it is definitely the benefits. So product designers are paid a lot more. It was also part of the reason why I wanted to switch from graphic design to UX design, because UX designers, they make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So when I was, you know, looking at the different salaries for technical writing, it paid less than what I was currently making, even though I was doing technical writing and also product design at the time. So it, you know, in my mind, I was like, I'm not going to be able to, you know, at my skill set and experience, be able to find a better job than where I am now. So I'm just going to put this off or just, you know, stay here longer.
Was that true?
It ended up, it's kind of hard to say, because I spent like 2 years looking for a new role. But in that meantime, I was still building up my skill set. So I got certified in UX and content design. And then I was doing like very, you know, work that involved a lot of strategy. So I was still building up my experience and growing, even though I wanted to find a new position.
It sounds like through that frustration, through that frustrating time, was when you were doubling down on your own education and your own experience. And that's what led you to get these different certifications and continue down the path that you were interested in.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just like the fear of not being good enough and then needing to, find a, get certified in something to just kind of like make myself feel better of the sorts that I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. And do you feel like you got that?
Yes. Like I did get very valuable, especially from the object-oriented UX course, I did get a lot of valuable things out of it. But of course, like I think another thing that I did was I networked. So I went to the, obviously within the OUX community, I chatted with people. And then also, I went to the ladies at UX Atlanta, this is post COVID. So a lot of things are virtual. And then I had the opportunity to join, different meetups that I wasn't able to before because they're all virtual. So I went to some of those, and then that also exposed me to some people and then also new information.
That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like it's this combination of taking lots of seemingly not positive situations and being able to capitalize on them between, COVID, even at your full-time job, being able to get that access to the stakeholders, really establish yourself in that leadership role, and then being able to network across the country in a lot easier ways. And even with the frustration in your job search, using that as fuel to say, okay, then what things do I need? What skills do I need? Even if that's just to make myself feel better, even if that's just to like check a box that'll make me feel better and make me know that I'm doing something, that I'm progressing in the direction that I want to go in. And that's huge. And so through that networking opportunity that you had, how did you prioritize who to network with and like how to capitalize on that networking?
For networking, I think first thing is that I looked at their role and then perhaps even like the company that they were working in, and then kind of attributed it to what I was currently working on. So for example, since I worked a lot with appointment scheduling in the automotive service interface, so I was looking at like Calendly, for example, and then reaching out to someone that worked at Calendly and then asking about their experience as a product designer or as a UX designer. So that was one way I approached it. So just taking the projects that I worked on and then looking at what companies I could be using that experience at, and then showing value. I also reached out to some people on Twitter just for like quick questions about like, how would you handle, for example, like when stakeholders are influencing your design decisions too much. So I asked for some advice in that sense.
That's awesome. And so you were expanding your network, you were taking these certification programs, you were applying for roles and getting frustrated, but still pushing through. And at what point did you change your mind with the product design roles?
Due to like some of my family's circumstances, I ended up needing to stay with my mom for a couple months. And then she had heard from me, she knew that I was not happy with my current job and had been that way for a couple years. So she said to me, while you're here, I'm your 24-hour support. I can help look after your son. and I can help you cook all your meals and, you know, do your laundry, you know, anything that you normally have to worry about at home, I can do these things for you. So how about you spend this time and look for a new job? And then, you know, at that time, like, I had already given up my job search for, you know, almost 8 months. So I was saying to her, like, no, I can't, like, I'm not going to be able to find another job with my skill set. I won't be able to find a job that is going to pay as much as what I'm doing right now. Like, I'm not good enough, so I don't think I can do it. But she said, you know, okay, just try. Like, she didn't push me. But then that night I reflected on what she said. And then starting that week, then I would work a few hours a day on improving my case studies. And then I was throwing out resumes, like, pretty much every night.
Wow. And, like, what a... Gosh, moms are magic like that. Where they just, they know what we need and are able to hold that support for us to be able to put us in that whatever place it is that we need to be. And like you said, like, not forcing, but just inviting and kind of giving us permission to go after what's important to us.
And that's so beautiful. And then giving you the space, like, I'm picturing
like a plane, like, she's giving you air coverage to just be like, go do it. I'll take care of all this other stuff. And I'll keep, you know, the things at bay so that you can focus on this and prioritize yourself and the things that are important to you.
Right.
That's so great.
Because we're talking about all things career change today, I wanted to share one of my favorite resources. During my career change into UX, affirmations were my favorite way to instill confidence and keep imposter syndrome at bay. During my coursework, job search, and even once starting my first UX role, affirmations were an important part of my daily practice. And so I went through all my past notebooks and compiled the 50 must-have affirmations to help you land your first UX role and supercharge your job search. You can get them by going to uxhustle.org/affirmations. Again, that's uxhustle.org/affirmations for the 50 must-have affirmations to help you land your first UX role and supercharge your job search. Hope you enjoy the rest of this episode.
And so what happened from there?
So from there, I actually ended up shifting the roles I've been applying for. And then rather than applying for, you know, UX design, UX UI design, and product design, I ended up applying for technical writing roles and also content design and UX writing roles.
And how did that feel?
It was actually a lot easier because I didn't have to pretend that I knew, like, you know, like, I was some expert in UI design and then trying to explain why technical writing was such a big part of my visual design process. Because when I tried to sell it that way to other companies, it didn't work out.
Because you were selling, like, the main thing that was important to you mm-hmm. as kind of an add-on.
Yeah.
As a bonus. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said that about how much easier it was, I just felt like this exhale, like this weight of, oh, it can just be that easy.
Yeah.
So what happened from there?
So I went through several interviews. So I threw out my resume to several large companies that I thought, like, you know, after reading their job description, I thought that I could provide value to their company. So I applied, threw out resumes there. And then one day, Meta actually reached out to me and then asked me if I'd be interested in applying as a content designer. So I went through that, and that was how I landed my current role.
That's awesome. And from deciding that you wanted to get into technical content, UX writing, and landing that job, how long How long was that?
It took me only 4 months.
Oh my gosh. And before that, how long had you been like starting and stopping and going through that process of applying and job searching?
Almost like 2.5 years.
Oh my gosh. What a big difference that makes in just seeing where you wanted to fit in and letting yourself go after it. And how quickly things can happen once you decide. Oh my gosh. I know we talked a little bit about once you started looking at technical writing and content writing and UX writing positions, that there were times when you were actually overqualified for the roles that you were applying to.
Right. So there was one company that I spoke with. Everyone was super nice and they really loved my work. And then they ended up rejecting me for another candidate because they said that I didn't have room to grow there. So they went for another person. And it was interesting because the amount of experience that I had, like, you know, years wise, was exactly what they were asking for on the, and then all the skills that they were asking for also on the job description matched exactly what I had. So that was pretty surprising.
Ooh, what a good reminder of like how sometimes the years of experience and even the skills that people list on job descriptions, like this is a good reminder to apply to the roles on the flip side, right? Where you feel like you don't have the qualifications, but actually you would be a good fit there because you do have room to grow. And that years of experience and skills don't necessarily reflect the depth of knowledge, the depth of experience that you have when it actually comes down to it. Because you have, what, multiple certifications, multiple like projects under your belt from your full-time job, but also this like very deep interest and experience level in all these different areas. And sometimes we discount our own experience in that way. And that's so interesting, especially the like dichotomy between feeling like you were underqualified in the product design space and then getting into this technical writing side where it's like, wow, I have way more experience. And so once you were interviewing with Meta, and so many people asked like how to get into Fang, Meng now, and did you feel like there were key differences that you felt when you were interviewing there or even now that you've started working there?
Yeah, I personally didn't really have too much experience applying or interviewing at like Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google, was it? But the approach that Meta took with me was very different compared to the other recruiters that were reaching out to me, in that the messaging that went with what they sent to me was something like, come join our community of, I think, 800 UX writers. And it didn't really explain too much about what you would be doing. But it was pretty vague and like high level. And it actually required 7+ years of experience and working as a UX writer or some sort of person in that field. So also it didn't mention salary as well. So it was just like a very different approach. And I almost thought that it was spam because I couldn't believe that, you know, like a Fang or, you know, main company would be reaching out to me.
Oh my gosh. And how did it feel? So it sounds like it felt kind of unbelievable. And how did it make you feel about your skills and your strengths?
When I decided, after consulting my father, who went through like many different management positions as an electrical engineer, like I asked him, is this spam? And he said, no, it looks valid. Like, you know, give it a try. So, as soon as I decided that I was going to pursue this, I decided that I was going to give my 110%. So it led me to really tighten up my case studies, making sure that I was fully prepared for any of the interviews. When I was getting toward like the final round of the interview, I actually got a coach through the UX Content Collective, and that ran through my personal projects just to make sure that I was addressing everything that the content design managers would be looking for in my case studies.
Oh, that's awesome. And I feel like getting that kind of perspective is so helpful. And actually, I'm curious, because you did work with a coach, what do you feel like is the difference between coaching and mentorship, especially in your experience with the coaches that you've worked with?
I feel there, I guess to some people it might be similar, but to me, a coach is more like someone you're paying time of. So like you're paying for their time so that they can help you make one of your skills better. Whereas a mentorship is like, for like coaching, it would be something that you already know about and then you just want to make it better. Maybe you're an expert in that field, but you just want like some validation or see how far you can go. Whereas mentorship is like maybe you know only a limited amount or maybe nothing at all about something you're interested in. And then you want an expert in the field to guide you and then help you get like exposure to the field. And then I think mentorship, I think in a lot of cases it's free. Whereas coaching, I mean, I guess it could be free or paid, but in most cases I've seen that you got to pay for a coach.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm always curious. I'm always interested in what people's different experiences have been, especially in careers, especially in UX space, of like where, when you go to each. And so you ended up at Meta. You've accepted that job. You've been at there for 2 months. How does it feel now that you have the title, you're doing the work? How does it feel?
It feels good. Like I feel that I belong, and that I can provide value with my previous experience. In a way, I am like a full stack content writer in that I understand how product design is done, and then it helps me also to build rapport with the product designers on the team. So that's definitely helpful.
That's awesome. Do you feel like when you wrote down be a senior technical writer in UX Portfolio Power Play, do you feel like that has now come to fruition?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, that makes me so excited. And like, just for more context, like, when were you in UX Portfolio Power Play? It was like exactly a year ago.
Yeah.
Wow. It really was exactly a year ago. That's crazy. That happened so fast. Mm-hmm. Like, in the grand scheme of things, when you write down, who do I want to be in that like vision board kind of way, and then a year later to be in that place. Oh my gosh. We also did in UX Portfolio Power Play, there's also an ideal day exercise of writing out your ideal day. And I'm excited for you to like look at that and see how things have been matching up with that too. Cause I feel like once you put those things out on paper or in Miro or wherever, like those things start to have momentum and start to build towards that. So what advice would you give the job seeking UXer who might be feeling how you felt when you were kind of hitting a wall with applications and feeling frustrated if you were, you know, being ghosted by different hiring managers or opportunities that you were putting yourself out there? What advice would you give that person?
I would say, like, don't take it personally. And then think about, like, I mean, I guess, like, don't obsess over it, but do think about why you were rejected and then what you can do to make the next job that you're seeking, the job that you apply for, how you can make that process better. So, for example, like maybe revisiting your case study and then maybe having like a few eyes on it. Like I know that, Amanda, you have a course that you are hosting where you can connect with other designers that are also going through redoing their portfolio and writing their case studies. So like bringing your case study there and then getting their input on it. And then also like if there's any areas where you feel like you're not strong in, then figure out ways that you can improve it.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, we'll be hosting a camp case study soon where you can work on your case studies, work through your portfolios. So you can go to uxhustle.org and check it out. If you're an experienced UXer and you're wanting to have, you know, that same kind of transformation that Tiffany talked about of where do I want my career to go and how do I actually make that happen and put that in my portfolio so that I'm putting that out in the world, now is the perfect time. And what about for the UXer who's looking for the next season of their career, but not knowing what that path exactly is? Kind of when you were feeling like, I like the technical writing, I am enjoying working on the end-to-end UX experience, but I don't really know where to plant my flag. What advice would you give that person?
I would say to, you know, try, if you're not sure, then just try applying for them all and then, and then seeing, you know, the reactions to them. Cause like, at least at the very least, you know, you'll get to talk to a recruiter who knows about what it's like to work in that role in that company. And then you can just ask all these questions to them and, you know, think about how many answers you could collect from so many different companies about that role. And then you can make your decision there. Otherwise, just, you know, reach out directly to people that you've met on LinkedIn or ask somebody who knows somebody else that works in that field and then connect with them.
I love that because there's so much like curiosity in that of stay curious. You don't know what you don't know and you have to talk to humans to help figure that out.
Exactly.
And then another piece of advice, what would you give for the parent UXer who's juggling a lot with their work and personal life, maybe also job searching as well?
Like I feel like in a way that's a trick question just because like you can't really, like there's no escape from that situation that you're in. Like it's just something that you're gonna have to pull through it. And but in a way, like you're sticking to your values, like, you know, your work is, your career is important to you and your family is important to you. So you're going to figure out a way to make it work. And that's going to require the support from people that care about you. And that's something that you'll want to take advantage of.
I agree. I think it is a trick question. Because it looks different for everybody. And what balance really means. And it depends on, you know, the different seasons that we're in and how you choose to balance. I'm putting in air quotes around that. It's like, we're always balancing. Like it's an action, not like a state of, yes, now everything's in balance. We're constantly balancing and figuring out how to prioritize things and what really matters. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Tiffany. This was really helpful, really insightful. I feel like it's going to help a lot of people that are figuring out, you know, what their niche is within UX, people that are feeling resistance around that niche, and even people who are job seeking and need some help.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the UX Hustle Podcast. To continue these conversations, you can follow us on Instagram at the UX Hustle or join our Slack community through the link in our show notes. If you love this episode, please write a review and subscribe.